So let's pick up where we were last time. So the goal of what we were discussing is we want to replace the holomorphic Wilson line by a 2D chiral CFT. And what we're going to find is that the Park-Taylor formula is going to be given by correlators. In this 2D CFT. And then by thinking about what kind of CFTs we can insert, we'll find the most general thing we can couple. It's going to be, gives us the celestial chiral algebra.
Can I ask, I think it's a very basic question of something I didn't understand the previous time. We are replacing, like, the holomorphic Wilson line is a one complex dimensional thing.
Yes.
But the CFT is two real dimensions, or it is two complex dimensions?
It's two real dimensions.
Okay, so we are replacing the Wilson line with the 2D, like, not the world seat of the Wilson line, or anything like that. Like, we have four complex dimensions.
No, I mean, Twister space is three complex dimensions. The Wilson line is one complex dimension. This CFT is also one complex dimension.
Okay.
Right. So the CFT lives on exactly the locus where we replace the Wilson line, the holomorphic Wilson line. Where were we? So here, I want to kind of draw a cartoon. So, if you remember, 2D states, sorry, not 2D, 4D states, which depend on a pair of spinners, are going to correspond to, like, things like a delta function. Or lambda. One said not on Twister space. So the important point to remember is that they have this delta function in them. So if I consider the 2D CFT on the z-plane, this is like super general. In the presence of states, so the 2D CFT is coupled to the 6D system in Twister space. That means if I turn on a field configuration in Twister space, I'm changing my CFT in some way. If I turn on a field configuration which is a delta function, I'm changing my CFT at a point. And the ways of changing a CFT at a point, that's a local operator, the CFT. So my state, psi, my I'd state, say, corresponds to a local operator. Oh. Based at zi, it depends on lambda tilde. So this is like a super formal thing that has nothing to do with any details. Like if I have a theory with a defect and I put it in some background field, that changes the theory on the defect. So I want to say that something like the Park-Taylor formula, some scattering amplitude, is given by a CFT correlator. So here's the general argument. So we can do two things. We can go down to 4D and integrate out the degrees of freedom on C. And this means we get some 4D local operator. Because if you remember, a point in 4D is this CP1 in twister space. So if I integrate at C, I'm just changing the 4D system at a point. But in the presence of these states, so that means we're studying a scattering process, 4D scattering process in, like, with a local operator. So such a thing, if you haven't seen the terminology before, a scattering process when you have inserted some local operator is called a form factor. This will be a form factor or if we stay in 6D, we're going to be the kind of thing we'll see is the correlation functions of these operators. And these two things must be the same, so that CFT correlators are equal to form factors. So for me, this slogan that I can compute form factors by looking at CFT correlators is like the really kind of key statement in how celestial holography works when you have a nice theory on twister space. Yeah.
I think I don't quite understand the general picture quite yet. So we have a state in twister space that we, and you said the key part is the delta function there that localizes you in real space.
It localizes you on twister space. On the z plane, it localizes you to a point on the z plane.
Yeah, localizes you on the z plane, and then, sorry, it doesn't localize you in real space.
No.
But okay, so then that corresponds to this picture of on the 2D CFT, you have a local operator. But then I don't quite understand the connection between form factors and CFT correlators.
Right, so if we forget about the states for the moment, I hope it's reasonably clear that integrating out whatever 2D degrees of freedom I have, maybe it's some bunch of fermions or something, will give me some local operator. Which local operator tells us is determined by how these degrees of freedom are coupled to on twister space. So maybe the details are a little opaque, but if I have a local operator and I'm studying how it behaves in the presence of a bunch of other states, that is the scattering process, the form factor. Now, on the other hand, we could do the same computation. I'm thinking about, we're studying what happens on twister space in the presence of this chiral CFT and a bunch of states. And we're trying to think about this in two different ways. First, I integrate out to 40, and I find it's about form factors. Or I just study it directly in 60, and it's about correlators. And then these things are the same.
I think when we say we integrate out those degrees of freedom, we are like we have a defect. So it is somehow non-local. And what we are doing is replacing it by like an effective vertex.
Exactly, but a non-local effective vertex. I mean, literally speaking, if we had a bunch of fermions and I integrated out, there's a formula, it's like the determinant. So you would get some completely explicit expression, which is quite close to the original holomorphic Wilson line we started with in that case.
Okay, and in the other picture, the correlation functions, like we are looking at the theory that lives in the kind of, like up to the 2D theory.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask one more question? The Wilson line, the holomorphic Wilson line, we think of it living in 4D and real space, or does it live in twister space?
No, it lives in twister space because it lives on like, if you give me a point in real space, I'll get a CP1 in twister space. So the holomorphic Wilson line will live on that point. So placing a holomorphic Wilson line or some other similar object along a CP1 will correspond to giving me a local operator in real space. Okay. So let's redo the Park-Taylor formula in this language. So Park-Taylor, we need to have two negative helicity states. These correspond to the other field on twister space, E. We get this BF theory on twister space. So whatever defect I want to insert, it's going to couple to both B and A. So let's try to build a 2D chiral algebra which couples to both B and A. By this kind of expression. So last time we checked, that absence, gauge invariance, implies that we have the following OPE. So we can play the same game, including B, and we arrive at some relations where I also have these J tones too. And J tilde. This one has no singularities. So I just wrote down the equations, but last time we did kind of derive it when we just had A coupled to J, we derived this explicitly. And this slightly more general thing is derived in the same way.
Is J tilde the anti-holomorphic current? Are we splitting them to holomorphic, anti-holomorphic?
No, J tilde is still holomorphic, but it corresponds to negative helicity states. So, because you know, twister space is really tied up with holomorphic geometry, it doesn't really make much sense to have anti-holomorphic stuff on twister space. So everything we do in twister space is always holomorphic.
How do I find J tilde? I find J by looking at the Lagrangian and seeing the conserved current. How do I differentiate between J and J tilde, between positive helicity and negative helicity?
Well, the bulk theory has two fields, A and B. And if I want to couple to a chiral system, you know, A must couple to some operator, I'll call that J, and B must couple to some other operator, I call that J tilde. So the way we're doing the argument is we just assume we're coupling to some chiral CFT and we don't know anything about it. And they just think, well, what couplings can we have? We can have those two. And for it to be Gaussian invariant, to be anomaly free, we have to have some relations. So here's one slightly tricky point. So the 2D chiral algebra, by chiral algebra I just mean the collection of OPEs, is not a unitary CFT. So for example, in a unitary CFT, we always have this kind of OPE. What's the identity? Where K is a positive integer. So this kind of OPE, this is a two-point function. So we can already see, just looking at these OPEs, that these chiral algebras, which are going to be part of the celestial chiral algebra, can never be unitary. So that means lots of your intuition about CFT fails. So normally, you might think, if you've taken a CFT class, that there's no difference between OPEs and three-point functions, that they're the same data. But that's only true for unitary theories. In non-unitary theories, things are a bit more complicated. So in a theory like this, the OPEs are unique, they're well-defined, but there may be more than one way to define correlation functions. Which are compatible with the OPEs. Okay, so maybe I'll kind of elaborate on this a little bit later. But just to go through the computation again of the Park-Taylor formula, there's a way to compute this. There exists a unique set of correlators which is non-zero only with two J tildes. So if you look at the formulas for the OP, it always preserves a number of J tildes. So it makes sense to say I want correlation functions which are non-zero with only some specified number of J tildes. And there is a unique way to do it when I only ask if there's two. And this satisfies J tilde B C2 is Z12 squared. Okay. So let's accept this for now, that the two-point function, that we can define an E two-point function satisfying this. And then by simple inductive arguments, we'll see that this algebra gives rise to the Park-Taylor formula when I look at the endpoint function. Mm-hmm.
According to the OP, wouldn't the two-point function of two J tildes be zero?
No, because the OP, when I write these tildes, I mean only the singular part of the OP. And I'm saying the OP U J tilde J tilde is non-singular. And that expression is also non-singular, so it's okay.
So this, I guess I'm having it like, as you said, with respect to regular CFTs, when we see OP expansions like that, I just think that if I take expectation values, they're the same thing. Under the path integral, these things are the same thing. But here, it's not the case that expectation value of J tilde is not zero, but it's some non-zero thing.
Well,
I might be confused.
I think like one confusion is like, you know, when sometimes when people talk about the OPE, they might mean all of the terms you see when you expand the correlator, whereas other people mean only the singular terms. And here I mean only the singular terms. So I think that's the main thing. And then the relationship between them is, if I have any correlation function, the singularities in the correlation function are given by the OPE. That might leave some ambiguity in the regular terms. Right. So that's why there may be more than one way to define correlation functions. The regular terms can, in principle, be ambiguous.
Do we feel that half dimension one, like yes?
What's that, sorry?
Like, I don't understand that expression in terms of dimensions.
Yeah, good point. It's because J tilde has a dimension minus one. It's to do with, so because A is a 0-1 form, and B is a 3-1 form. So it has B has an extra dz dv1 dv2, and this expression, which is of dimension minus 2. So j is of dimension 1, and j tilde is of dimension minus 1. Okay. So this is, again, another funny feature about these theories. Almost in the celestial CFD, almost all of the states are of negative dimension. So let's go through the computation. So Park-Taylor formula is, if I take the amplitude 1 minus 2 minus 3 plus n plus is equal to sum and as we discussed before, I'm possibly missing a factor of 1 over n in this expression. So now let's, for example, look at the 3.1. Is equal to 1/4. So up to a factor, this is the only terms that contribute for the 3.1. You know, a priori, there are 6 terms in this sum. But really, as Raquel mentioned, we actually, the cyclic permutations don't actually do anything. So I want to compare this to the 3-point function of the CFT. What's that say?
What is R and what are T1s and T2s? Like TI is?
TR is trace, and T sigma 1, these are the matrix elements corresponding to my states.
It's 1, 2. I think he's asking about the negative felicity states upstairs.
No. I'm asking what's R, the thing inside the correlator, and what are the TI? The matrix.
It's
1, 2.
It's
1, 2
to the 4.
It's not an R.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I can see how it looks just like an OR. Sorry about that. Okay, now let's try to calculate in the CFT. What is j tilde a z1 j tilde z b z2 j c z3? So the rules of the game are that this expression has poles when two insertions collide, and those poles are determined by the OPE. So now we know there's no poles when Z1 hits Z2, because that OPE is regular. So we're going to have poles when 3 hits 1, or poles when 3 hits 2. So the pole at Z1, 3 is, our formula for the OPE tells us it's, you know, it's J How did I write it? I just want to make sure I get the right sign. Okay. It's 1 over 3, 1 times F, C, A, D, J tilde, D. And similarly, the pole at Z, 1, sorry, Z, 2, 3, it's given by the same kind of thing. Sorry, we call it Z, 3, 1. Okay, now, the pole, in the correlator, the residue of the pole must be the two-point function. So that, for instance, this expression must look like when Z3 goes to Z1, I'm just going to insert that thing there, 1 over Z3, 1, F, D, C, A, times the two-point function of J tilde, D, Z1, J tilde, V, Z2. And this in turn is Z12 squared over Z31, F, C, A, B. Okay, so everybody follow this argument? Maybe I shouldn't be doing this manipulation in quite so much detail because it's quite elementary. Similarly, the pole at the other point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shouldn't that be JD tilde of C3?
Here?
Yeah, because the argument here is C1, which is.
Okay, yeah, we could do that. It's actually not going to matter, right? Because.
But then the denominator will cancel from this. The pole will go away.
No, because we're going to have, on the numerator will be a Z23. But whenever you have a first order pole in the OPE, it actually doesn't matter where you evaluate it, because the difference between the two evaluations is something that vanishes at Z12. And it doesn't, and therefore is not non-singular. This one was. where z2 goes to z3, 1 over z2, 3, and z1, 3 squared. F C B A. So we want to get a function which is depending on all three variables, which has these poles. So the claim is the unique, I'll explain in a second why it's unique, global function with these poles is going to be that. Cubed. I think it's just this. Sorry, I didn't prepare every detail. This is written in one of my papers with Natalie, this computation, but it's all extremely easy. I'm just slightly messing up the algebra.
Can you explain again why, like, I think that maybe I don't understand how we are doing the OPE, like, I understand that those are the only singular parts, but when we do an OP, I thought that we needed to sum over all operators.
No. I mean, the singular part of the OPE tells us about the singular part of the correlation functions. Now, it's not obvious, because I haven't explained some important points, that there couldn't be, other terms which are regular. So I'll go over here. I'll leave those up. So if I give the chiral algebra by specifying the singular parts of the OPE, there may not be any ways to define the correlation functions, or there may be very many ways to define them. In this case, there is a unique way to do it. But the reason is we have the following additional constraints. Thinking about the twister geometry, implies, or really thinking about the spin dimension, which is the same thing, implies that any insertion of j, this goes like 1 over z squared as z to infinity. So it has a second order zero, and any insertion of j tilde must go like z squared. So this is simply just a statement about the spin of the fields. So with this extra piece of information, we're saying, well, giving a function of three variables, I know how it behaves when everything goes to infinity, and I know its poles when they coincide. In this particular case, that is, say, just as a function of z3, it vanishes to second order at infinity and has a first order pole at z1 and z2. That determines it uniquely.
And these two different things that we computed, they correspond to two different channels for the OP or not? Because maybe that's what I'm not seeing. Like, I mean, we have that three-point function, and what we are doing is doing an OP with two of the operators.
Mm-hmm.
But I want those two things to be the same, or I am summing those two things.
No, when I say, I'm not saying this is equal to that. I'm saying the pole when z3 equals, in the limit when z3 goes to z1, it picks up a pole which looks like that. So it's equal to this plus terms which are regular at z1, 3. And similarly here, it's equal to this plus terms which are regular at z2, 3. And now, to solve, so these are two constraints on the OP. Now I want to solve these constraints, and this thing will do it for us. And when, for example, here, when 3 goes to 1, I have a first order pole, and in this limit, I can replace z2,3 by z1,3. When 3 goes to 1, this is the first order pole, and in this limit, I can replace z12 by, say, z23, because 3 and 1 are the same. And then the z23 cancels, and I get z23 squared, which I had over there. And similarly for the other one. So some algebra. Implies some very elementary algebra. This is the 3-point Park-Taylor formula.
I'm sorry, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask one question about the uniqueness of this, like the unique part of this claim. So what we're saying is we have a function of three complex variables at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
We know asymptotically what happens in each one of those variables. It has to vanish in that particular way. And then it has to go to infinity in that particular way. And then we also have the poles and the residues.
Mm-hmm.
And so the claim is there is a unique function that satisfies all of these constraints.
Exactly.
And it's exactly the Park-Taylor.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And the uniqueness part is if I tell me it's because in this variable z3, the order of vanishing at infinity is the same as the total number of poles in the middle. So it vanishes to order 2 at infinity, and therefore, and it has first order poles here and here. Which means, if I had two such things, then the difference between them would be regular at these two points, but also vanish at infinity by the maximum principle, it would be 0.
And I'm sorry, but there is a reference that does this calculation?
So this is discussed in at a paper with me and Natalie Piquette. Title was something about celestial holography. Meets twisted holography. So in many ways, if you guys have, I know some of you have taken, done a psi essay with Freddie on amplitudes, then you might know about splitting functions or collinear singularities. Have you seen that before? No? Like if I have a scattering process and the two momenta become parallel, then you typically get a singularity. So the content here is that that singularity is the same as the singularity in the chiral algebra. So it might be a fun exercise to go through the rest of the computation. Let me do the 4.1. Is that the endpoint function? Is equal to the park header. So we can ask, what happens? What about more general couplings? E.g., we could couple the derivative of my gauge field to something. So you can show that the most general way of coupling a 2D CFT, chiral CFT, to the theory on twister space I have a big infinite sum involving a bunch of derivatives of A in the normal direction, and I couple this to some currents, some big tower of currents I'm going to call JNM, plus something similar with a B. So it's kind of reasonable you can have these things because, you know, one, if I have a 2D CFT, how could I change the coupling? One way to do it, I could change the position in which it lives by moving it in the directions v1, v2, which are normal. If I do that a small amount, that would be the same as adding these derivatives. So... there's a certain amount of fiddling around, but it's not hard to convince yourself that this is really the most general thing you can do. And then these JNMs, J tildes, are going to form the celestial chiral algebra. So gauge invariance applies the OPEs. No, sorry, I'm reading this wrong. Plus or. So I just want to write out the formula. So to check that these OPEs are the ones you need for gauge invariance is some simple manipulation, which is similar to what we did before, so I won't go through it. So this is the celestial chiral algebra for self-Julian angles. And then let me just briefly say how this relates. So a state of positive or negative helicity is maps to algebra or something similar with the J tildes. Okay, so that every state in four dimensions can be realized as some infinite sum of elements of this algebra. So we want to have a similar story saying, okay, for the Park-Taylor formula, we determined that if we defined correlation functions correctly, the correlators were given by the form factors of self-Julian angles. So there's a generalization of that story. Which says that local operators in 4D are the same thing as ways of defining correlation functions. Compatible with the OBE and form factors for a local operator are equal to correlators. Okay, so look, this is all pretty fast, so are there questions?
Yeah. I think I'm confused again about the general picture. So Park Taylor amplitudes and Yang Mills, there's no defect in that theory. It's just
But when we view it from the point of view of self dual Yang Mills, there is. This is even true for full Yang Mills. You can take full Yang Mills and look at the form factor of the operator trace F squared. That's also given by the Park Taylor formula. So that's really the interpretation of the Park Taylor formula we're using. It's as a form factor.
What is the operator trace of F squared?
Oh, just in Yang-Mills, I could take the field strength, maybe the F plus or F minus, and square it to get a local operator. It's one of the terms in the Lagrangian.
Like, it's not F where it's F, we are, or is it that?
Yeah, and so the operator, in the self-dual Yang-Mills, the operator is trace B squared, but in just, Yang-Mills, the relevant operator is trace F minus squared. Trace F minus wedge F minus. But I'm putting this at a point rather than integrating it over space-time.
And so is it fair to say that we have two theories, and so there's the 2D CFT and then there's the 4D theory we interpret. So we have these two theories, and in that particular way, they're connected.
Exactly.
I'm trying to understand the function of twister space in the story.
Let's see. So if I have a local operator, so the important thing is that local operators must correspond to things wrapping a CP1 in twister space. So that kind of delocalizes a local operator into something about a CFT. I think that's the most important point.
And then coupling that Wilson loop to a 2D CFT gives rise to this algebra that celestial.
Yes, I mean the Wilson loop and the 2D CFT are kind of the same thing. I mean you get the formulas for the Wilson loop. They can be derived by thinking about the OBEs as well, as we kind of did.
Is it? If I have a theory in the 4D,
yes.
4D theory,
yes.
Is it always possible to find that particular algebra?
No.
Writes this description.
No. So you can definitely write down perfectly reasonable seeming 4D Lagrangians whose scattering amplitudes of form factors, even at tree level, are not given by any chiral algebra. You arrange this, so if I have a 1 over ij, this is going to be a zi minus cj. And that's good in a chiral algebra. But it's also possible to have 1 over ij, the square brackets, and this means we do not have chiral algebra. So what's not fully understood, people would like this to be something like 1 over z bar I minus z bar j. So it's not fully understood to what extent you can you give me some theory, to what extent you can build something which is a mix of chiral and anti-chiral and has a similar story.
So it's the essential part that in the 4D theory needs to somehow be decomposed into negative and positive felicity states, something like that.
Yes, and you need something about how the negative felicity states don't really interact with each other.
And that's where the self-dual part of...
Exactly, exactly. I mean, you could say it's not really possible to have a chiral algebra while preserving parity symmetry, because parity symmetry switches these two things. But the chiral algebra says, I only have these.
And on the point of trying to find theories that are, so for example, for young males, that is not self-dual.
Mm-hmm.
If we really want this process to be like this picture to be true, it's like for young males, Park-Taylor still holds, like
yes,
Luan's scattering amplitude.
Yes,
but then we have also derived this really nice picture of Park-Taylor amplitude as being the unique function that satisfies
yes
these analytical properties.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it would be really nice to have a picture for that as well.
No, I agree, but the way I want to think about it is, like, the things you can compute in self-dual Young Mills, that's just some subsector of the things you see in full Young Mills. So I view full Young Mills as a deformation by adding on the operator trace p squared. And if I think about it that way, then I can do calculations in full Young Mills by looking at the operator trace p squared and its form factors. That's how you derive the Park-Taylor formula. The part about it that I'm excited is that makes me excited is that sometimes you can do this for loop quantities as well, like typically up to some finite order in the loop expansion.
These are scatterings of gluons?
Yes.
Can we do also like scattering of gravitons?
Yes, that's really interesting. If you scatter gravitons, you get a more complicated algebra. Yeah, I'll talk about that next time. You get a more complicated algebra, which is related to the W infinity algebra. So there's some explicit formulas. Kind of you get this kind of thing. Z. This kind of thing. But maybe we could try to derive this next time. Yep.
I have a question about the algebra that arises from the most generic coupling of the gauge fields with the 2D CFD. It has indices, it's indexed by n, m.
Yes.
And those correspond to the number of derivatives that we have.
Exactly, yeah. So that's related to momentum, space-time.
I see.
Yeah.
So is there some geometric interpretation for these currents?
What kind of thingy?
I ask because I don't think this is well-founded, but I ask because I hear sometimes people use the word super-rotations, super-translations.
Oh, yeah. The super rotations and super translations are in this gravitational algebra. The J00s, the lowest lying modes. I mean, see. But if you look at this expansion, right, so these are, I mean, lambda tildes are related to the momentum. It's like the energy. So I'm expanding a state in terms of soft modes. And the J or S things are just kind of, you know, the components of the soft expansion. the lowest lying one, J00, is the very softest gluon thing. This OPE, there's the Weinberg soft gluon theorem. When I have 0, 0, the remaining OPEs are some kind of tree level corrections to that. The J00 really implements gauge symmetry, and the other ones are some kind of enhancement of gauge symmetry as part of some asymptotic symmetry algebra.
Could you say a bit more about the Weinberg theorems about this divergences when two gluons are collinear? And then I guess I'm asking, is the reflection of the singular part of the OPE, is that a reflection of the Weinberg theorem, basically?
Yeah, so you can interpret it two ways. So the first way to interpret it is like, if I'm studying QCD and I have some kind of other kind of horrible thing here, there's always, whatever horrible mess I have here, there's always a contribution to the singularity when two things become collinear coming from this diagram. Because when these become collinear, this momentum in here becomes on shell, and I get a divergence. So this always looks like 1 over 1, 2 times horrible mess, the plus state. So this collinear singularity just is the OPE, really. I mean, it's the same formula. So Weinberg's soft gluon theorem is something slightly different. If I have some horrible mess and a bunch of gluons, and this one has momentum p which goes to 0, it's very soft, and these ones I'm going to parameterize by the momenta by zi lambda tilde I, then the pole, this is like z lambda tilde, the pole at p to 0 is sum over I over 1 over z minus ci times something. So this is exactly what we find. If I have an insertion, just J00, z, this expression has first order poles at the insertions of all the other operators given by a formula just like that. I'm not getting all the details of this right because there's something about the helicity of the particles to make this formula work.